It's the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP. Now, here's Todd.
Hey, welcome to the program. In our first segment today, we're going to learn a little bit about the Clallam County Orcas. They're the beneficiary of the Bob Cup Golf Tournament, which is in its 10th year, coming up a week from this Saturday down at Cedars at Dungeness. And we have Wendy Bonham here, who is the program director for the Clallam County Orcas, and she's going to talk a bit about the tournament. We're also going to talk about the Orcas, too, as well, because if you follow some sports, we once in a while talk about the great things that go on with Special Olympics and specifically this local group too. So Wendy, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right. Me. So let's talk first a bit about the Clallam County Orcas. Okay. And this group of Special Olympics athletes you have here locally, right?
Okay. Well, we've been here for 18 years. Yeah. Surprising how many people don't know that. And we have currently, we have 7 sports that we offer, and all year round, we have bowling and basketball and swimming and track and field and golf, yay, and softball and bocce. And we have about 100 athletes now.
Wow.
We started with 7 bowlers 18 years ago, and we have a lot of fun.
And if I understand, I mean, at all different levels of skill levels, it's an all-comers sort of thing. Mm-hmm. This is really just intended to get folks with special needs an opportunity to do some sports.
Absolutely. Yeah, every level. Yeah, we have a bowler, at least one, sometimes we have more than that, that's in a wheelchair. And okay. So we have ramp bowlers who can't lift up their balls. But we have sports that accommodate better people who can play better too. Mm-hmm. But we do accommodate. We have skills. Golf has skills program that's amazing. We have great coaches, and they just teach them how to play, how to putt, and how to drive, and it's a lot of fun.
You know, we hear about the Special Olympics, but I don't think a lot of people understand how this works. Give us kind of how your athletes here might compete at Special Olympics, if they get to a certain level. You know, how does this work? And I know that most of the time the Orcas are just really just kind of competing with themselves, right?
No, not at all. We practice with ourselves.
Okay.
So we have practices here or training, but we have regional meets or tournaments, events, and then people that get gold medals at those events go to the state level.
Got it.
For almost every sport, not every, it depends on how many participants they have in each sport statewide. They just actually change that. But so we get to travel, of course, since we live up here. But we also have an invitational golf tournament here we invite people from programs from other areas to come and golf with us.
How many, I'll call them tournaments, I guess, but how many events do you travel to typically in a year?
Gosh. Well, usually 4 regional and 4 state. Some sports like basketball has sub-regionals.
Okay.
And there's more then. And we do go to invitationals when other people, to give our athletes more opportunities to compete, because they love to do that,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. How does someone get involved with the Orcas? What's
just send me an email at clallamcountyorcas@gmail.com, and I will get you going. It's really pretty easy to do it. And anybody, we love volunteers too.
Yeah, that was my next point. I mean, you may not have an athlete, but you're probably looking for help wherever you can.
Always,
right?
Yeah. We love coaches and helpers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all in all, I mean, you've got 100 some athletes, you said, mm-hmm. basically. Okay, how many volunteers and coaches does it take to kind of make all of that happen?
Well, in any one season, so 2 seasons we have 1 sport, and the other 2 seasons we have 2 and 3 sports. And some of the coaches coach in multiple seasons. And the volunteers volunteer in multiple seasons. But that's why we'd like to have more, too. So we have, right now we're doing bocce, and we have about 10 volunteers. And then in golf, there's 3 coaches. And then one of our programs in golf is a unified program, which is another program in Special Olympics that we participate in bowling and in golf. And in golf, so once they get out to the level past individual skills where they can golf on the on the green, then they have a partner who is a knows how to golf and is a cat. Well, not a caddy because it's their partner, and they play alternate shot, and so they really teach them the rules.
Wow! Right.
So once they learn all the rules and they really know the rules, then they can golf on their own.
How many golfers locally have you had get to that?
Oh, we have a lot. That,
do you?
Well,
okay.
A lot for us. We have, I think in some years, this year is kind of different. It's a strange year. But usually we have about seven pair of golfers. And then we have up to 10 individual skills. But we could have more than that.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, you just rattling this off. It takes some dollars and things to get this to work. You have travel. I mean, you've got equipment. You have a lot of things. So, and speaking of golf, this is your big fundraiser that's coming up. This is the 10th Annual Bob Cup Golf Tournament. And this is in memory of Bob Duncan, who was an Alaska Airlines pilot in his day and was a huge supporter of all that you do. This was the thing for
With his wife,
yeah, in this as well. So it's fitting that this is continuing on long after we lost Bob. So tell us about the Bob Cup Golf Tournament. And I would assume there are still some spaces. If you are a golfer out there, you'd love to have you come, right?
Absolutely. Mary Jane Duncan is his wife. And yeah, we appreciate her so much that she has kept on doing this, and because it does benefit us. We're really lucky here in Clallam County that the schools here in Port Angeles don't charge us for space, but we do have to pay for other venues. Bowling costs money, and the golf course doesn't charge us when we practice, but we do after our tournaments we have to pay. But uniforms and you didn't ask me about that.
No, it was perfect. Now you're kind of telling me a bit about some of the expenses,
right?
And
what uniforms is something you didn't mention, and the travel, of course, and sometimes, for instance, swimming. Our swim meets are in Federal Way. And they want us to be there really early in the morning, so we'll pay for a hotel for some of our athletes, so they don't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to drive and then swim.
It all adds up. I mean, you've got quite a bit, and when you have that many athletes participating and all of that. Okay, so the Bob Cup is a golf tournament. It's a golf tournament plus. I kind of call it that way. Tell us a bit about on July 26th, what's going
to
happen.
So it is a golf tournament, and we'd love to have more golfers participate. And we also have a barbecue afterwards, and the fee that is $120 pays for the barbecue and the green fees and a cart and a raffle ticket. But you can just come to the barbecue if you like for $20 and then stay for the auction. And we are so lucky. We always have two round-trip tickets to anywhere Alaska flies. And this year we have two sets of Seahawks tickets. I can't tell you what seats they are, but I think they're good seats.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of other really fun stuff in our auction. And it's really a fun day. We're pretty easy going and have fun.
Yeah. And it's a great way to get out and learn a bit about what Special Olympics and the Orcas are all about here locally, too.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
I know
love
you guys do a lot of outreach to folks about here. Yeah. This is what you're supporting. I was just looking through this. We don't have time to do this whole list, but you have a ton of sponsors and donors. I mean, I think that really says a lot about support you have.
Yes, and Mary Jane.
Yeah, well, she's hard to say no to. I've had her on this show many times.
I know. Yeah, that's right. No, I love her. Yes, we're really thankful for all of our sponsors, and a lot of them golf, too. So they really like the opportunity to come out and golf.
That said, I'm sure you would still take a few donations now.
Absolutely.
Right? As well as people who want to sign up to golf. What should I guess contact Mary Jane's the best thing to do if you wanted to get in, maybe give a donation?
Yes.
Yeah,
you can contact her or me.
Or you.
Either
one
of us. Again, Clallam County Orcas at gmail.com.
All right. And that's all. Clallam County Orcas, all spelled out, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And at gmail.com. That's probably the best way to make contact.
Easy, yeah.
If you are a golfer, should they do the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay. And you can sign up that way as well.
I'll give them a link that they can sign up for.
All right. It's a wonderful event. And it's great that it's going on. It's hard to believe. It's the 10th annual of this, but here we go again. So it's not this Saturday. It's a week from Saturday, so you still have time to get your golf skills up.
Yes.
Or get a couple of friends to come out and golf with you as well.
Absolutely.
And that'll be at Cedars at Dungeness with the 9 o'clock. It's a four-person scramble tee-off. And checking about to 7:30 that morning. So plus the barbecue after it's all over. And you can get all the information by dropping an email to clallamcountyorcas@gmail.com. And Wendy will get back to you.
I will.
All right. Wendy, it's good to see you. Thanks for
nice
coming
to
down.
See you. Thank
good luck
you.
On all
thank
of this.
You.
And thanks for all that you're doing for all of those special needs folks.
Well,
that,
thank you for having
that,
us.
This is a big part of their life. I mean, this is
absolutely
a huge social thing
huge.
As well as physical activity and such as well.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
I understand that as our world becomes more automated, receiving personalized service from a real person is more meaningful than ever. I'm Dan Chappie, and as a farmer's agent, I know a thing or two about how to help you select the insurance you want so you can
protect what matters most.
Call 360-681-0696 to learn more and chat with me, a real person and experienced farmer's agent, today.
We are farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers, Truck Fire Insurance, Exchanges, and Affiliates. Products not available in every...
Welcome back to the show. It's time for our weekly Bacon Bit. That's when our own Amanda Bacon sits down with some famous folks and talks with them about what's going on in their lives and careers as of late. And this time out... Did you like Seinfeld? Well, Amanda sat down with Seinfeld writer and producer Larry Charles to talk about his memoir, Comedy Samurai, 40 Years of Blood, Guts, and Laughter. Here's this week's Bacon Bit.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm alive.
Yeah, you are. So first of all, God bless you. You went through the Malibu fires, and yet you are still putting yourself out there, trying to make comedy in this world. Not trying. You are actually successfully making comedy in this world and still putting beauty out there, even though you were faced with this. Thank you.
My pleasure. You know, comedy comes from pain. And
yeah.
So that's... I've had a lot of material based on a lot of the pain that I've been through.
Wow. So let's start with why you chose now to write this book about your astonishing career.
Well, I've been working on it for a long time. I mean, I thought that this would be an interesting book, a book that people would really enjoy reading. I was looking back and thinking, wow, I've done all these cool things, you know, and I have a really good memory. And I started committing all these things to paper, and it really sort of just... evolved out of that. The pandemic came along. I was able to spend some time on it, although I also shot a movie at the same time. I like to have a lot of things going on at once. And so eventually the book actually got finished. It was 1,000 pages originally. And I gave it to my agent, and he loved it. And they gave it to a publisher, and they loved it. And they said, well, we love the book. It's just too long. And so what we did was cut it in half. Because all my childhood stuff, up until the time I got my first job on Fridays, we decided we'll just make that a separate book, you know?
Fantastic.
So that book will come out at some point also, because I had a very surreal childhood, just like I've had a very surreal adult life.
What was your first working job in the business?
Well, the first thing I did, I used to sell jokes. I wrote jokes, like handwritten jokes. I didn't have a typewriter. I would stand in front of the Comedy Store, and I would sell jokes to comedians in the late 70s. And one of those comedians got a job. He was cast on a TV show called Fridays, and he recommended me. And I went in for the interview. I hitchhiked to the interview, and I got the job. And Larry David and Michael Richards were on that show. And I suddenly went from being a parking valet and a bellhop, and now I was a TV writer. So it was a life-changing event. I've had many of those, very luckily.
So the other Larry calls you up and says, I have an idea for Seinfeld. Is that what happened? I mean, how did you then get hitched with Michael Richards, obviously, as well, but that trio come back together?
Well, Seinfeld was something, you know, it was not really respected very much by NBC at first. They did a pilot. the NBC didn't think much of the pilot, and a whole year went by, and I knew he was working on it, and then they did four episodes, and he wasn't in charge of the show. Larry was not in charge of the show at first. He had, like, bosses who were above him for those first four episodes. And then when the show finally got picked up for 13 episodes, he was in charge, and the first thing he did was ask me to come and work for it. And he gave me the original scripts, Chinese Restaurant, The Busboy, some of those first scripts, and I read them before they were produced. And I thought, this is the funniest thing I've ever read. I can't believe this is a sitcom that's going to get made. And he was able to hire me, and I got hired on the show, and that's when I started. And it was great. And Michael was on the show, and I knew Michael's potential. And so I was able to really tap into that a little bit and find, like, a niche for myself, writing, expanding Michael's character a little bit.
Well, and obviously you and Larry David have a chemistry, because then you guys work together on Curb and other projects.
Yeah, we have a very, you know, we're both from Brooklyn. We're from the same neighborhood. He's older than me, but we have a lot of the same kind of internal combustion that pushes us forward, and the anger that you get from growing up in Brooklyn. And we were able to translate that into something funny. And so we always had a great simpatico, a great chemistry between us.
Is there a story that you decided to write that, as you were typing it, you're like, this could either be perceived as really snarky, or people are going to understand that it's meant to be comedy?
Well, I wrote a notorious episode called The Bet, which was about Elaine buying a gun. And, you know, at that time, women were buying guns, and it seemed like a really interesting subject. Elaine seemed like perfect to be somebody who would decide to buy a gun and have it, you know, not turn out well. And so I wrote that episode kind of knowing it was controversial. Everybody seemed to like it, and we had a read through, and we actually hired the actors and built the sets. And then people started to express discomfort with the gun plot. And eventually they said, we're not going to do this episode. And so, so that happened. And so, you know, I struggled sometimes with stories, because my stories tended to be a little more controversial. I did this episode called The Airport, where originally another Elaine incident, actually, where Elaine was sitting in coach and Jerry sits in first class, and the guy sitting next to Elaine in the original story dies. And somebody had told me that story. I mean, that does happen. People die on airplanes. What do you do? It's the middle of the flight, you know, and they just covered him in a blanket. He had to sit there next to the person. And I thought, that's hilarious in a very dark way, you know.
Right. I get it.
And they said, no, we can't do that. That's too dark. And so he just became obnoxious instead of dead. But we changed it there, you know. And then I did an episode called The Subway, another Elaine story, where she's on the subway and she gets on the express instead of the local by accident. And she's heading to Harlem, and she suddenly gets scared. She's going to be the only white person in Harlem. You know, we hear her thoughts. And they were like, this is too much. This is just too much. So we had to change that story. And we made it so that she was just very anxious about the train getting stuck in the tunnel, you know. So things like that did happen, yes.
What do you hope people get from your book now that you're putting it out in 2025? What do you hope people gain from this?
I hope people take away two things. One is, trust your instinct. You know, whatever you do in life, trust your instinct. Your instinct can be wrong sometimes. It's not always right, but that's all you have, you know. And then the second part of that, which is connected, is don't be afraid of failure. Failure is a crucial component in success. That is part of the equation. You will survive failure. And in fact, you may learn something from failure that you could have never learned from success. And so those two things together, I think, are the things I'd love people to walk away with.
Do you have a giant failure that you feel launched you into your success?
Well, I have a whole list, a whole list of failures, so many. But I'm here, and I wrote the book, and I've had a lot of successes, too. So I see them as two sides of the same coin, you know?
Incredible. Larry, God bless. Comedy Samurai, 40 Years of Blood, Guts, and Laughter is out now. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Amanda. Great to meet you.
Now, you can catch this Bacon Bit and all of Amanda's Bacon Bits, plus all of our other pre-recorded bits on our Radio Rewind site. Just go to our website at myclallamcounty.com and click on Radio Rewind at the top of the page.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Welcoming back my favorite master gardeners from the Clallam County MGs. I'm going to do that now because it makes it sound like you're a rock band. Like a rock band. Judy English and Jeanette Stair Green joining us again. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Wonderful to be here.
Beautiful day outside. Oh, everybody loves talking about gardening and such when the weather's like this.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about one of the things that most people hate most about gardening, and that's weeds today.
Hate most and can grow most effectively.
Yeah, my yard is nothing successful. But a weed patch, and I've just come to accept that. I just mow it down, and it's green, and I'm fine with that. But I do have places where I don't really need the weeds, so I'm going to be paying attention on some of this as well.
Yes.
So, that said, we're going to talk first, I guess, about, I love your notes, attractive solutions? This is a question mark. We were just chatting before we went on the air that these are some things you might have heard could work.
Yes.
Or not.
Yeah.
And so the discussion really is why they might work or why they might not work.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Yes. That said, maybe do we need to do a backstory on this or not? Because part of this show came together because Judy's dear husband
over breakfast with Jeanette one morning said, "So Jeanette, what do you think about using
vinegar to control weeds?"
Okay.
He was like, "Hey, let's vinegar. We're putting in a new landscape. This is what I want to do because I want to protect the environment. I want to protect us from toxic chemicals. What do you think about this?"
And so the answer then is,
well, you need to do a little research is the answer.
Okay.
Exactly. So we're going to really focus on
that.
We're just going to start, and it's going to be a round table, all of us contributing. Right. But the thing that Ed was asking about was the use of vinegar, and this is very popular. People are like, "Oh, I use vinegar on the weeds at my house."
Yes, and you can buy a high strength vinegar.
Yeah, you can get like 47%.
Who knew?
Way more than you would. In fact, you have to wear goggles.
This is harmful to human health to be, inhaling any of those fumes. So, so there is a horticultural vinegar.
Mm-hmm. There is, absolutely.
And so number one is don't just go to your cabinet and pull off the vinegar, apple cider vinegar that you're using.
Yeah. Or rice vinegar or white vinegar.
It could like maybe cause the plant to have a little hiccup. I mean,
but
if it's a really tender plant,
acidic enough to do what it needs to do, right?
It's nearly acidic enough. But that then drove us to looking a little more closely about how effective is this horticultural vinegar?
Mm-hmm. Right, and a side comment, so I don't forget to make it: when you use something like a 47% or 30% vinegar. If you're putting it in a sprayer and there's any aluminum or any kind of metal that the solution goes through, it will damage that and cause it to corrode over time.
So only a plastic sprayer probably if you're using that stuff. Yeah, a little like a, right, okay.
Yes, this is a little
hand one.
Little labor intensive here.
Mm-hmm. Right, so if you've got a big lawn, going to be a problem.
Good point though, right?
So it is a contact herbicide.
And so what do we mean by that?
What it touches is what it will damage. So if you can spray it on the new growth of little weeds, mm-hmm. very effective as far as damaging that tissue. It causes the tissue to then leak and desiccates the green part, becomes all dried up. However, it's not a forever kind of solution
so to
speak problem.
It's not being absorbed by the plant to go down into the roots.
Okay.
Right. So I think where we're going with this. If you've ever gone out and pulled a bull thistle with a mm-hmm. big old tap weed, or I'm dealing with some other clovers in our driveway right now, the top Looks maybe good. Looks like it's been damaged. It dies back, but those roots go on and on.
Right. And it, with some plants, mentioning thistles, that root going on and on, you just end up with a bigger thistle and more thistles because of how it spreads underground while you're thinking, I can't see it above ground. So, yes, acetic acid will work, vinegar will work, high enough concentration to kill the top part of the plant, the green part of the plant. And if it's a big thistle, it's going to take several applications to do that because there's a lot of material that has to be damaged and for it to dry out. But it is not a solution that's going to get rid of that weed.
Okay.
It does probably have uses. A young weed, young tender weed.
See, right. I'm sort of thinking about doing this. I think I'm probably going to use it correctly. So I'll get this. We just put in a flagstone patio, and before we seal it, we want to kill all of the in the spaces where the sand and such are. I'm pulling as many as I can, but
then a really important point is that it's not a pre-emergent. Whatever, it doesn't kill the seeds of weeds that are, you know, in the soil.
So what should I use on that?
Doesn't
instead?
Even kill the roots of those weeds because it doesn't go down into it.
Well, the next is the thing that I offered Ed in our discussion only to find out it has limited uses as well, and that's corn gluten. So corn gluten is, it's not, again, a kitchen product. Mm-hmm. It is something that you buy at a nursery that has a very high concentration of nitrogen. I believe it's a byproduct of milling corn.
It is, from what I read.
From what I read. Yep. And this, if you put it onto the soil, it will prevent the weed seeds from getting going. It doesn't prevent them from germinating, the little roots come out, but as soon as the roots come out, the soil is too dry and it won't go any further. So it's what we call a pre-emergent. It's like you'll never see those weeds in a sense if it's working.
I have a question. So you said the soil is too dry. Why is the soil too dry? What if it's been raining?
That therein lies the rub, is that you actually have to wet the corn gluten as you put it down, just to, I guess, to kind of activate it, get it into the soil. But then you need a period of dryness for corn gluten to work.
All right, so you don't want it to rain right away after you've wet it to put it in.
You don't.
Okay. Yeah. And I think you mentioned that it's a nitrogen, has a high nitrogen level.
How could that come back and bite us?
The high nitrogen encourages plants to grow.
Right.
So, it's a little confusing on this one, how you're going to be able to use
it. It would seem like anything
this.
That might come in after the fact, there's nitrogen then has been established there, it's going to just make it that much fertile.
It could, where it's no longer doing its job of making the soil dry, desiccating the soil, but it's providing this slow-release nitrogen for what follows. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think there are uses. They've demonstrated it's harder to do in the field, but like in potted plants and stuff, they've been more successful.
Right. It is pricey compared to other things.
That's another thing.
So using it in a very controlled environment where you feel that you've covered all the pros and cons is probably a good idea considering that it's pricey.
Okay.
But it may, in very certain limited situations, be useful. And I think like what you're doing in a pathway or something, realizing these limitations, if it rains or whatever, you might have some issues. It might not be effective.
I'm going to probably be doing one of your tried and trues that we'll talk about in a bit before I seal it all off, because that's going to be the easiest. Go ahead.
That was one of the reasons that Ed asked the question, because we have an area where we have pavers so how do we control the weeds in a tight little environment like that where you don't want them growing up between everything? Landscape cloth is an effective way of dealing with everything underneath the soil level in a couple of layers of landscape cloth. In that environment where you have flagstone and sand and all this stuff might be a way.
But that'll keep things from coming up from the bottom. You know, I think our problem in our place is stuff that flies in the interim, right? Because you've got this exposed sand that birds are dropping things and all the story. Mm-hmm. You know.
Exactly. Right. So you are kind of getting into the why this isn't great for everything.
Yeah.
The weed cloth works by shading what is underneath. It needs sun to grow, and it's shading it. Over time, organic material builds up above. Like if you're putting gravel around stones or whatever, just stuff gets in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weed seeds come on top, and then they germinate and have a new life there. Mm-hmm. So it has some serious drawbacks. It works for a little while. As the weed cloth breaks down, then it's not going to work at all. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Interesting questions. All right.
We did not touch on one other one that you have in your list here, and that's burning them. This has been a no-no, too. If you heard our news this morning about the burn ban or burn restrictions that are going in, we've already had some issues with people out with the old flamethrower, more or less, burning weeds.
Oh, my gosh. And if you've never tried this, you do not appreciate the whole flamethrower phrase there. It sounds like a rocket taking off. This is you have a propane tank and a hose and a nozzle that you then light, and you don't actually burn the plants. You just damage them. It's a quick over the top. You don't stand there
and it works.
Make them
die. Other stuff, but yeah. But like these other things we talked about, it's not going to be a permanent solution, right?
It's probably not. And it's kind of back to that first thing with the vinegar, where it kills the above ground growth. So again, fresh, new, newly sprouted weed seeds probably will do some good. But if there's a root underground, you just kind of burn it off, and then it grows back.
Uh-huh. Right. And you have to have your hose nearby so that you can prevent a forest fire.
I also say, there's something that happens in large agricultural places where they grow do grass growing. They burn it. Mm-hmm. The reason they do it is to clear their crop, and it also fertilizes the soil.
Yes.
Essentially, so you're in some ways you're making the soil a little richer underneath there. And if you mm-hmm. don't want another weed to grow in it, that's probably not something you want as well.
Yeah, counterproductive.
Again, I think there's probably uses for it. If you get out there early, and the risk of fire is probably the major drawback. So if the weather conditions are right and you're getting out early and just this quick kind of through the patch, that's great. Between rows in a vegetable garden would also be effective. But, if you have a lawn that's got weeds growing in it or a bed.
Spot treating is probably maybe not. Look a little weird.
yes. It probably
doesn't
look great.
And your whole lawn might go.
And your whole lawn and house and everything. Yeah. Yeah. So
okay. So those are some things that kind of could work, but maybe not.
They do have some validity, and that's what we want to acknowledge. But with everything, just like dig a little bit deeper.
Right. Find out a little bit more. Pros and cons.
Yes. Well, and I love it, with the vinegar thing. I think a lot of realizing that because a lot of people are doing that, be ready. You probably have to keep doing it.
Yes.
Right. I mean, this is something that isn't going to be a one-off for people.
Absolutely. But it is a safe way to treat an area where you've got pets and,
And that's that's our deal. It's like, okay, how are we going to keep the cat out, or how are we going to do whatever?
Certainly not going to use a really toxic product out there.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the tried and true methods, some things that will work, probably some things you don't want to hear us say because they're a lot of work. But there you go. Jeanette and Judy will be back with more with Master Gardeners right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
I understand that as our world becomes more automated, receiving personalized service from a real person is more meaningful than ever. I'm Dan Chappie, and as a farmer's agent, I know a thing or two about how to help you select the insurance you want so you can
protect what matters most.
Call 360-681-0696 to learn more and chat with me, a real person and experienced farmer's agent, today.
We are farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers, Truck, Fire, Insurance, Exchanges, and Affiliates. Products not available in every state.
All right, we're back talking weeds with the Master Gardeners, Judy English and Jeanette Stair Green, and we talked about what kind of works.
Yeah.
Depending. Maybe. And now we're going to go to the things that will work.
Yes.
Because it's tried and true. Although, as I teased during the heading to the break, they're probably going to break your heart a little bit because none of this is a
and hurt your knees.
us Americans, we want the quick fix pill. Just give it to me and I'll be done with it. Right?
You better buy all that right. box of gloves.
Top of your list, mechanical. Also means pulling the weeds by hand if you need to. Yeah. Right?
And a lot of us get maybe a little bit of satisfaction out of pulling out those weeds. But, you know, you can also hoe them off at soil level. Again, you're not going to be removing the root, but if you continue doing it or it's a tender young weed, that will work. You can consistently mow an area. Now, that's not going to give you back your grass, but it will remove, like, the flowers that will seed then other parts of your yard. And sometimes if you mow enough, you will outlast the weed.
Right.
My yard's that way. I mean, I just kind of gave up on trying to weed and feed and all that stuff. And I just mowed it. And it's fine. It's green. I like it. It's very hardy, actually, because the weeds tend to be more drought tolerant.
That's true. You have more of an eco lawn.
I have a native species sort of lawn that way. Anyway.
It's a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
And the weed and feed... that does have that second word, feed. Mm-hmm. So when you're putting that stuff on, you are dealing with the weeds temporarily, but you're enriching the soil by the feeding that you're doing for that's not...
Your grass likes it, but the weeds like it too.
Yeah.
When they come back,
which they will. So
some people might say that's a racket because you're putting it down and you're just going to need to buy more of it to take care of the weeds that come back later.
Part of their business plan,
maybe
I think.
It's a good business plan if that's the case.
The other mechanical or physical thing is like a mulch. A mulch actually kind of makes a thick mulch, a couple of inches of bark or wood chips or whatever, does make it less hospitable. And Judy was talking about how she found it easier to pull weeds out of an organic mulch, probably.
Right, and especially if you put down ground cover cloth underneath.
Yeah, so you've got shallow dirt.
Right.
It's kind of loose.
Right.
Easy to get them out.
Yeah. You will have weeds, but they're easier to get out.
Very much easier to get out. And if you use a heavy-duty cloth, that will last for years and years, and then put bark on top of it. That's your idea. You know, put down the cloth, put bark on top, plants in holes that you cut into the cloth, put in the irrigation, and beautiful, not that many weeds out there. But when the dirt and everything does start broken down leaves, collect in that bark, weeds will start to grow. But you're pulling them out of out of bark and a couple of inches of dirt, not out of mired into the 2 feet down.
Not, as we say, roots that look like they're going to China. Right? And the old adage is like...
I thought you were too young for that.
Oh, no. I heard that a lot in my yard. Okay, cultural methods. This is interesting.
Yeah, so cultural is what the gardener themselves do to take care of their spot. And so things that would encourage the weeds, such as watering them, fertilizing them, that kind of thing you want to avoid. So very directed watering. Only direct the water at the plants you want to survive. Only fertilize. So don't broadcast fertilizer all over the hillside if you don't want weeds.
Yep. Right, to encourage the weeds. And with watering, same thing. Especially in a vegetable garden, you have more control there. Water just the plant or just the row rather than in between everything.
Drip irrigation or soaker hoses are really the way to go. They'll help limit where the weeds pop up. A little less work for you. Right. I think also cover crops are really good. If you're kind of harvesting a crop and now it's going to lay fallow for the rest of the summer into the winter, planting some cover crop that'll outcompete the weeds, you will then, kind of dig that in the spring and you'll enrich your soil, make it a better texture, but it outcompetes the weeds.
Right, and doing nothing, just leaving it open and just the normal rainfall that we have, well, you will be able to harvest a lot of weeds come springtime. So really think about doing something there, and a cover crop is a good solution.
All right.
Biological methods, not so much for the homeowner.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some really interesting things going on with tansy ragwort and whatever, where they have a virus or a parasite or something, but I don't think that there's much available for the homeowner.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a big, it's more of a commercial.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And then
the biggie.
Chemical methods. And a lot of people, the reason we were talking about the first list is they want to avoid what we're talking about here. But I know you have, over the years, have said, you know, there's still room for chemical treatment on certain things.
Yes.
If it's done right.
Yes.
Right. And so what is the phrase that we use in Master Gardeners? The label is the law.
Yes.
And first you need to identify what your plant is. So, and actually identify it. And you can go online to WSU online spot called HortSense, HortSense, and they've got a weed section, and they're described, they have photos. If you can't find it for sure, identification there, you could go to a plant clinic. But first of all, identify what you're trying to get rid of. And then...
And actually, the reason why that is important is that different weeds require different methods of control.
Right. The problems that we've come into is trying to do this broad spectrum stuff.
Yes,
that's
yes.
the Roundup stuff. That's the stuff that gets us into trouble.
Yep.
Right?
And this will allow you, like, oh, is it an annual? And if I just get rid of the flowers, no seeds, I'm going to be controlling it. Or is it a perennial with this root that if I break it up, it's going to be like the sorcerer's broom and come back in, you know, multitudes. So identification, we can't emphasize that enough.
Absolutely. And in reference to coming back in spades, horsetail. If you pull horsetail and you don't get rid of all of it, depending on where the horsetail is in its development, you can generate more horsetail by any droppings that you might not get into your trash can. And you're certainly not going to put it in your compost pile.
Yeah, and Canada thistle is also in that same, like, don't try to dig it out because you will make the problem worse.
Yeah.
Two things to be thinking about with chemical control is, how does it work? Is it a contact type of a herbicide, or is it absorbed by the plant? Remember, if it's contact, it's just what it hits. So it'll, again, maybe just kill the above-ground growth, and the underground growth will be there to come back again. So learn about that. What does that weed need, and what does that herbicide you're thinking about using do?
And what time of year does your weed do whatever it's doing, and when is it most vulnerable? So, you know a lot about the weeds.
And that's
so
part of the ID process of this. Yeah.
Yes.
You should be able to get all of that,
information
about when to apply.
And then buy the right product.
Right.
And
the
apply
other thing,
it at the right time.
The other thing is selective versus non-selective herbicides.
Yes.
You used that term earlier that we non-selectively do this. And there are some herbicides that affect only certain kinds of plants, like grasses versus broadleafs and that sort of thing. So again, learn about that. If you're applying a broadleaf to a grass, you're not going to get rid of that problem. So it's really important to be a educated consumer when it comes to using chemicals.
Yes.
Okay. Whew. I learned a bit. Thank you guys for coming in and getting me straightened out on weeds and all of that.
And we did too.
Yeah. Yes,
thank you for having
me. That's their green.
Thank you very much.
Judy English. It's always a joy to have you guys in. Thanks for stopping by. And we'll do it in a month or so. And we're going to take a break and be back with more in a moment.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.